Hi, I'm Julia.
And I'm Henning.
And we're from Roundtop. And you're listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM in Acra, Hudson, and Catskill.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we have all sorts of sounds and songs and stories for you, including we'll speak with Nathaniel Gray, who is the new executive director of the Pride Center of the Capital Region. Plus, we've got radio news about what can be sold in Russia, and we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network. This is the news.
On Saturday, April 23rd, turn out or tune in to hear the band I Heard It on the X perform at the Track at Boom and Bloom, the record and flower shop in East Durham at 2176 Route 145. It's Record Store Day, and the shop is having the band in to perform an homage to early ZZ Top. The band features ex-drummer of the Scissor Sisters, Patty Boom, and drums and vocals, and he hosts the Vinyl Freedom Show every other Tuesday at noon on WGXC. You can go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about the show. And you can also tune into a live webcast and broadcast on 90.7 FM. Of the show Saturday, April 23rd, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Track at Boom and Bloom, the Records and Flower Shop in East Durham on Route 145 with I Heard It on the X on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bindlestiff Family Circus of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Lauren Stanforth reports for the Times Union that New York is the only state in the United States with multiple counties at high risk for COVID-19, according to the most recent data released by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. According to the CDC, there are now 10 counties in the high-risk category: Broome, Cayuga, Jefferson, Lewis, Onondaga, Oswego, Seneca, St. Lawrence, Tioga, and Wayne. The information comes as the state has identified two highly contagious Omicron sublineages that are making their way through central New York and surrounding regions where the spread is most prevalent. In comparison, only one other county in the continental U.S. is at a high risk of COVID-19, and it is in Kansas. Most counties nationwide are at low risk. However, there is evidence of increased risk in New England, with much of Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont also now in the medium risk category. Albany and Rensselaer counties, Berkshire County of Massachusetts, and Bennington County in Vermont were also at medium risk as of April 17th. The CDC's designation recommends that those in high-risk areas wear a mask indoors and get tested if symptoms develop. Medically vulnerable people are advised to take additional precautions to avoid infection. Hospitalizations in New York, while slightly increasing, are still very low compared to the Omicron surge in January. The state noted late last week that in central New York, where coronavirus spread is greatest, quote, use of therapeutics is up considerably, unquote, reporting an increase in the use of a drug called Paxlovid and the doubling of the use of Molnupiravir. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
The Poughkeepsie Journal reports that New York announced 52 approved cannabis growing licenses April 14th, with several local farmers included. There was one licensee in Albany County, three in Columbia County, six in Dutchess County, four in Schoharie County, one in Delaware County, and two in Ulster County. Eterna Cannabis, LLC, Claverick Farms, LLC, and Fatnell, LLC, were the three growers authorized in Columbia County by the State Cannabis Control Board. Alan Gandelman, a Cortland-based hemp grower and president of the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association, said announcing the first cannabis growers now will allow spring planting and an October harvest. Gandelman said, and I quote, "We have a narrow window here. Most people are planting cannabis in our area around May and June, so we're pretty much there," end quote. Farmers are limited to a combination of up to 1 acre of flowering canopy outdoors or a little more than half that space in a greenhouse. Governor Kathy Hochul said in a press release, and I quote, "New York farms have been the backbone of our state's economy since before the American Revolution, and now New York's farms will be the center of the most equitable cannabis industry in the nation," end quote. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that the village of Coxsackie experienced four water main breaks last week as crews worked around the clock to repair them. Mayor Mark Evans announced on April 14th that during the previous 36 hours, three water main breaks had occurred on Bailey Street, with an additional break on John Street. The mayor said village highway employees worked two straight overnight shifts and a full day that Thursday to make the repairs. He said service was restored on Bailey Street as of April 15th. Evans noted that water service had to be turned off because the break would not allow the village to sustain service given the amount of water loss that was occurring. Quote, "We got 20 to 25 water breaks a year, and our guys are really good at fixing them," unquote, Evans said. Quote, "They usually have them fixed in an hour or two. Unfortunately, we get a rash of them at times, especially in the spring when frost comes out of the ground. So this is really kind of commonplace, unfortunately. We get a series of them usually. So hopefully that's it for this spring, but you never know," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako reports in Porcupine Soup that there will be yet another vote on whether the town of Cairo has a recycling center April 20th. The town's recycling center in the Angelo Cana Town Park was closed in October 2020 by the unanimous vote of the board. The board said at the time that, and I quote, "Greene County Solid Waste Department noted that the Cairo recycling dumpsters had to be dumped into the normal domestic garbage stream due to contamination by unrecyclable materials," end quote. So they stopped the recycling theater. The board also cited garbage strewn near the facility and staff harassment. At a meeting earlier this month, the board voted against reopening the recycling center. Board member Tim Powers questioned why Cairo should recycle. He said, and I quote, "My question is, why are we reopening it?" End quote. Board member Mary Jo Cords answered, and I quote, "We had a lot of people come to town board meetings and say that they wanted the recycling center open," end quote. Then Deputy Town Supervisor Cords and Councilperson Michael Flaherty voted in favor of reopening the facility, but Councilperson Tim Powers voted against, and three votes of the board's total of five members is needed to pass a motion in CARA. Town Supervisor Jason Watts and Councilperson Deborah Bogans were absent, but that is not expected to be the case April 20th, when Watts seems to be the third vote needed to open the facility. Watts said, and I quote, "I won't stop bringing it up. I want it back," end quote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup.
Janet Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper that Hudson school officials March 5th presented a $54.1 million budget for the 2022-2023 school year at a meeting of the Hudson Board of Education. District voters will be asked to ratify the spending plan on May 17th. Voters will also be asked to elect five of the board's seven members. The $54.1 million plan represents a 3.6% or $1.9 million increase over the district's current budget of $52.2 million. The proposal assumes $26 million in state aid and requires $25 million in tax levy. 48% of the district's proposed revenue will come from state aid. The tax levy increase could be as high as 4.57%, according to state law, but Superintendent Lisa Marie Spindler previously promised to keep the increase under the maximum allowed. The transportation costs are up 10% because of rising costs of labor and fuel. Teacher retirement costs will increase 22%, but total employee benefits are up only 1.6%. Health benefits are expected to increase by less than 1%. Tuition for students with disabilities placed out of the district will increase by 14%, and the district will spend $333,000 to hire new social workers. On May 17th, Hudson Schools voters go to the polls in Hudson, Greenport, and Claverick. Information is available at hudsoncsd.org. You can read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
New York State on April 14th extended its ban on all live fowl shows and exhibitions in the state to, and I quote, "all fowl auctions and other events for the purchase, sale, swap, or trade of fowl," end quote. Currently, 26 states are dealing with the highly pathogenic avian influenza.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather from your solar-powered radio station. On Monday, the National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 5 p.m. So it'll be sunny before that for the solar panels, and there'll be a high of 50 with a light and variable wind becoming southeast 6 to 11 miles per hour. Monday night, rain is likely. There's a 100% chance, and it might be snow, too, depending on where you are. 3 to 5 inches of snow are possible in higher grounds. That snow continues Tuesday morning before 9 a.m. Then it'll be just rain everywhere, with mostly cloudy skies and a high of 42 and a west wind from 9 to 11 miles per hour. Tuesday night, there is a 20% the rain continues before 11 p.m. with cloudy skies and a low around 36. Wednesday should be sunny with a high of 49 and a low around 31. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Monday, April 18th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at WGXC, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear from Nathaniel Gray, who is the new executive director of the Pride Center of the Capital Region. At 10 a.m., it's time to get on the Afrosonic Taxi with tracks from Yussi Nador, Thomas Mamfumo, and Salif Keita, among others. At noon, it's time for the Deep 3 Show. After the local news, Jennifer Coe, Hamid Drake, and Zuzu are among the featured artists. Then there's new music at 2 p.m. from Vital Weekly, Kaja Draxler, Anna Kaluza, and John Roder, among others. At 4 p.m., we're live from Housatonic in Western Massachusetts with the WGXC Afternoon Show and Kieran Riley. At 7 p.m. from Fair, Norman Solomon is the guest on the Law and Disorder show. And then we are live from Acre at 8 p.m. with J.D. Eisman and The Spell, and live from Catskill with Nancy Giles and Carmen Borgia with The Mosquito at 10 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Saturday, April 23rd, turn out or tune in to hear the band I Heard It on the X perform at the Track at Boom and Bloom, the record and flower shop in East Durham at 2176 Route 145. It's record store day, and the shop is having the band in to perform an homage to early ZZ Top. The band features ex-drummer of the Scissor Sisters, Patty Boom, and drums and vocals, and he hosts the Vinyl Freedom Show every other Tuesday at noon on WGXC. You can go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about the show, and you can also tune into a live webcast and broadcast on 90.7 FM. Of the show, Saturday, April 23rd, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Track at Boom and Bloom, the Records and Flower Shop in East Durham on Route 145, with I Heard It on the X on 90.7 FM WGXC. The Churchtown Dairy at 357 County Route 12 outside of Hudson hosts a Dandelion Festival on April 30th. The Dandelion Harvest features food, live music, a gardener's talk, face painting, children's story time, pizza, and much more. Find out more about the first annual Dandelion Festival at the Churchtown Dairy, April 30th, on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can list your own events that will be read on the radio and seen around the world in the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, April 18th. We are 29.5% of the way through the year, and we have 64 long days left until summer. Early morning temperatures range from 28 degrees up in Hubble Corners to 34 down on the ground in Quarryville. Snow reports are in for western New York, ranging from 1.5 inches in Paris to 4 inches in Constableville. And according to depth sensors, about 2 inches down, the ground is still around 41 degrees. Okay, first, the good news. It is going to be mostly nice today, high of 58 degrees at 3 p.m. And now the bad news. We start with rain entering the area around 6 p.m., then it gets stronger overnight. And now I have a dreaded four-letter word for you that you may want to protect the little ones' ears from. Snow is possible for all of us. More so the higher in elevation that you go. The direction of the weather pattern is going to matter a lot, and unfortunately is not very certain at this time. So far, it looks like down by the river, we could see nothing to a half inch of snow, and up on the mountain, could see as much as a foot. Added some wind gusts and driving conditions could be pretty dangerous. The overnight low is predicted to be 35, but that could be off, and that at that point, a couple degrees means a lot. Tuesday is going to warm up a bit, reaching 49 degrees, and we can expect the rain to linger into the afternoon. Overnight, it dries out with a high of 41. Wednesday will be dry with a high of 54. Overnight, we dip to 35 degrees, then a high of 60 and dry conditions on Thursday. Today, the pollen levels are expected to be high, and tomorrow, they're expected to plummet. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:32 a.m., low tide at 11:32 a.m., high tide again at 4:57 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:37 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 50 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:24 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:06 a.m. Looking way up, we see that over the weekend, an X-class solar flare was emitted along with a coronal mass ejection that will not be headed our way. Minor geomagnetic interference is expected today as we pass through a plasma stream. Solar wind speed is currently 583 kilometers per second at 10.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 74. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Everything is real radio.
The Everything is Real radio program broadcasts here on WGXC 90.7 FM every second Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Don't miss it.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alex Benson of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is really me now. No more hiding. Listen, we're all worried. We're all in pain. That comes with having eyes, with having ears. But just remember one thing. It can't get any worse. It can only get better. Quitting is not going to make you strong. Living will. So just hang on. And hang in there. You know, I know all about the hating and the sneering. I'm a member of the why bother generation myself. But why did I bother to come out here tonight? And why did you? I mean, it's time. It begins with us, not with politicians, the experts, or the teachers, but with us. With you and with me, the ones who need it most. I believe, with everything that's in me, that the whole world is longing for healing. Even the trees, and the earth itself are crying out for it. You can hear it everywhere. It's the same kind of healing I desperately needed, and finally feel has begun with you.
This is Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with your daily radio news. Adi Robertson reports for The Verge that the Russian invasion of Ukraine has been fought with tanks, planes, ships, and humans, and also with radio waves. It's a battle of information over the internet, television, and radio. And while the U.S. has banned selling almost anything to Russia, a few radio-related products are now allowed for export to Russia to help in the information war. The U.S. Department of the Treasury is exempting telecommunications services from the sanctions against Russia. Advocacy groups for anti-war protesters inside Russia predicted that blocking internet services would cut off Russian activists' access to the outside world. So the Department of the Treasury is allowing, quote, services, software, hardware, or technology incident to the exchange of communications over the internet, such as instant messaging, video conferencing, chat and email, social networking, sharing of photos, movies and documents, web browsing, blogging, web hosting, and domain name registration services, unquote. Access Now, one of the groups advocating for Russian activists, applauded the decision. Quote, U.S. internet communication technologies are key for human rights defenders and independent media to report on and fight Russian and Belarusian governments' aggression in Ukraine, unquote, said the group's tech legal counsel, Natalia Krapvia. Internet backbone providers Lumen and Cogent and MailChimp operator Intuit ended their service in Russia before the sanctions were approved. Slack only blocked the access from Russia after the sanctions hit. The Ukraine government has asked for more than it has gotten so far. Ukraine wanted DNS overseer ICANN to revoke Russia's access to the domain name system, but was turned down. ICANN said a revocation, blocking Russia from the rest of the world, could have, quote, devastating and permanent effects on the trust and utility of this global system, unquote. The Russian government has not been acting in kind, as they have been blocking major global services such as Facebook and Instagram in a wide-ranging crackdown on free speech of any kind. Read more about this story at The Verge and read more about radio news at wavefarm.org. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Nathaniel Gray, the new executive director for the Pride Center of the Capital Region. Nathaniel, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to chat with you.
So just to start off, who are you? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you come from?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. You know, the way back is that I was raised in a really, really small town in Southern Ohio, like 4,000 people small. I was raised in a family where both my parents are Marines and my brother's a Marine. And we went to a conservative evangelical Bible Baptist church 5 times a week. Really awesome way to grow up if you're an effeminate little gay boy. That's all sarcasm, right? Like it was awful. It was the bullying and I got out of there. I went to New York City and went to school for musical theater. I worked professionally in theater for about 10 years. I was a full-time drag queen. And through all of that though, something was missing. And I always wanted to work with kids. I always wanted to give back to the community. I think that my parents being military service members really did impress upon me like giving back. I started teaching. I realized I loved working on behalf of the queer community and with queer kids, starting a GSA, and then got my master's in social work. That was in 2015, the beginning of all of this. And that's where it really kind of lit a spark, like, oh, this is what I want to be doing with my time. You know, I became obsessed with the research and the stats and figures around the need that our community, the LGBTQ community has, especially around homelessness, mental health, these big, big picture things that most people don't think about. The year that I graduated, my program at Fordham was 2 months later, the state was looking to bring in someone specifically policy-minded on LGBTQ issues. And I was really grateful to get that position. So I moved up here to the Capital Region for a position with the state government to support policy for LGBT kids in foster care, juvenile justice, and runaway homeless youth. And also doing a lot of work to support the LGBTQ affairs of the governor's office. And then COVID, right? Like then 2 years of COVID, nothing had like it disappeared, right? But during that 2 years of COVID, one of the pieces that I got to do with the governor's office was do a lot of outreach to all the organizers of Pride or like events across the state. You know, the governor's office and the New York State government likes to make sure that it's supporting those kinds of events. And so I got to go that first summer of 2019, and then COVID, it was all virtual support, but that's how I got connected with the board president here at the Pride Center of the Capital Region, because I came and presented a proclamation in 2021, and that kind of sparked a conversation. And at that time, I was looking to step into more local community work, boots on the ground. How are we helping specific people today? Kind of a job. So now I've been in this role for a little over 2 months.
Great. Thank you for that background, Nathaniel. So can you just tell us a little bit about what the Pride Center does and for the community, in the community?
I always like to start at like, what is a Pride Center? Because if you're not LGBTQ+, you probably have no idea what it is or that they even exist or that they actually have existed for like half a century. This one in particular is the longest continually operating Pride Center in the country. It's 52 years old. So Pride Centers started and really cropped up post Stonewall riots and became like a community hub. And, you know, for all of those listening out there, this is like, you know, before the internet existed and before cell phones existed. And this is when landlines were the only way you were communicating with folks. And so the Pride Center really early on became like there's, you know, a phone number that I can give out to you that is a safe number for you to call that is not my home. So it had a lot of community feeling there over the years, and I won't go into all the history of it, but decade after decade, they've had to change and shift. So, you know, during the AIDS crisis, they were really triage spaces and they were like, you know, information hubs, when funerals were, how they were happening, who died, it was difficult, but they were critical for that. And so now we're in this new era post-COVID and trying to think about what the Pride Center here, our Pride Center wants to be. And so what it has been in the past, for the past couple of decades and critical to the community, has been a service provider. We provide about 30, 35 hours a week of free mental health counseling one-on-one. That's with our licensed clinical social worker and also the interns, social work interns we oversee here. We actually have a wait list of about 6 months right now. So one of the big pushes I'm making as the ED is we need to raise the money and have consistent funding to hire more mental health practitioners because the need is clearly there. And so that's one big slice of what the Pride Center does. But another awesome big piece of it that I'm really loving, not only help support, but push even further along and grow is group work. So 4 nights a week, currently we have groups. Monday night is men's night. Tuesday night is trans night. Wednesday night is women's night. Those are all 18 plus groups and they run from about 6 to 8 p.m. And they kind of fall somewhere between social and support, right? They're hangouts. It's to avoid the isolation, to address the COVID isolation we've all been feeling, and then create like a group support space for anyone who needs to voice something they're going through. On Friday nights, we have a youth group that is awesome and wild and growing exponentially. It's from 4 to 8 p.m. That first couple of hours is just socializing time. It's almost never that an LGBTQ plus person is also in a room with all LGBTQ plus people. We're often at our job or at our school or even in our home where we're the only one. So for these kids to come here and just basically have play date time with a bunch of other queer kids is critical to their mental health and isolation. But then at the end of that sort of hangout time where we do provide like snacks and games and stuff, we also run a group space again for youth to sort of voice anything that they're going through that they might need. And then some other groups we're really excited about that are starting. We've recently redecorated our entire basement studio to become a yoga studio space. So we are going to be running free queer yoga classes from 6 to 7 p.m. every Thursday. We're going to be running a parents group we're calling Family Pride. That's going to be starting in May. And so these groups are, we're using the fact that we have a brownstone, we have this beautiful space, it's right in downtown Albany, right off of Lark, near the big CDTA bus stop at Lark, and remind people that they should be coming here to this space and meeting other queer people and normalizing being in here. And then the last slice is we do a lot of work out in the community on educating. So we go into schools, we go into mental health facilities, we go into social work organizations, you name it, and basically helping professions and do training with them on how to make sure that they're creating an LGBTQ affirming environment.
As the new ED, do you have goals for the Pride Center in terms of the bigger picture? What comes to mind is there's been predecessors to you in this role and varying degrees of pushback from the community and the Pride Center. So how do you win back or have you won back the image of the Pride Center in the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, great, great question. And it's the only way we find accountability and you know, unity as a community is to address what happened. So I'll be the first to say many of the things that the predecessors that you're talking about did happened well before I moved to Albany. And that does not absolve the Pride Center or the board or that person from the impact that it had on the queer community of the Capital Region. It also clearly doesn't do anything to avoid it if there is a whole subsection of the community that we're here to serve that does not feel comfortable or safe coming here. And so first of all, I will say, one of the ways that we plan on addressing that and doing something more visible is to have community forum time to bring people into the space to hear what their concerns are in a more public way. That is first and foremost. Second of all, I'm speaking with our board just about what our responsibility as an organization is to our community and what our responsibility is in creating an organization that the whole community thinks is safe. And if there are people who don't, it's a fruitless effort to say, well, they should. No, it's our job to make them feel safe. And if they don't, it's our job to make them feel safe. And if they don't, it's our job, right? Like that's, for me, it always comes back to that. So as far as specific issues that happened, I'm still like getting all the pieces, but I'll address them sort of all in this format. For people listening, I'm white, I'm cisgender. the two communities that I think were the most impacted by the things that were done were the transgender community and the Black and Brown community. I'm not a part of either of those. And that, I'm sure, is disconcerting to plenty of people who are part of either of those communities, because, like, why is there another white cisgender gay man in a leadership position, right? Like, I'm good having the uncomfortable conversation. And I think here's why, because this is the way that I spoke when I talked to the board of my interview. My first internship with my graduate degree, I was doing direct clinical work with homeless queer youth who were in the GED program, right? It's called HSE, High School Equivalency now. And I was working with a trans young woman, Black young woman, probably 19 years old, had been street homeless for a few years, was street homeless specifically for being a trans woman, was kicked out by family, disowned, street homeless, and also participating in the street economy, which means that she was, you know, a sex worker and not the kind that's like, I feel empowered by this. I love the fact that I am a sex worker and we should decriminalize it, but the kind that's like, if I don't have sex with someone for money, I won't have a bed to sleep in. I won't have food tomorrow. So while we're having a regular session about just how she's doing, something sort of snaps with her and she goes, you know what? I'm really tired of not being trans and not being homeless. I'm tired of being Black, because if I were a white trans girl and an escort, I'd get to sleep over. They wouldn't just kick me out afterwards. If I were a white girl and an escort, I would get dinner too. And something inside of me broke and got very angry. And a couple of things occurred after that session was over, but then I had to sort of pretend like I was okay and hold space for her while I'm having a lot of my own stuff come up. So that session ends and a couple of things happen. One, I realized I'm not a clinician. I have to work with the community in a leadership role. That's why I love this job. But two, that there is no such thing as LGBTQ work that is not also anti-racist work, that is not also trans-specific work. So my lens on all things when it comes to the policies that we will put out, the way that we will operate in the community, the partners that we will pull in, is all boats rise, and we need to address the needs of the most marginalized within the queer community, which are Black and Brown trans people. So the past is the past, and we're going to be accountable for that past. And I would invite everybody to come to the center, come to a group, come meet me. We're planning a really awesome barbecue on April 24th, Sunday. It's like a Meet the Center event. Come just try again. And if you can't, I get it. And we're going to keep working to bring you in. But if you can try, please come, because I promise you, like, we are doing the legitimate work, the real work. I've already reached out to several people that I know who are transformative leaders, who are young and are brilliant and are diverse. And I want to get them on our board. You know, I'm reaching out to people already about how we need to make sure that when we're running groups and services, that they're accessible to people who are not in the white parts of Albany. And then the last piece that I would add to it, and this is why we have to be out in the community more than in this building, is the 10% of the global community that identifies as LGBTQ, right? Like, averages that to about 10% gay, LGBTQ in total. That 10%, we 10% are not the people causing the issues that are leading us to need mental health care. It's not transgender teens who are bullying other transgender teens to the point that they're suicidal. And it's not those transgender teens, transgender parents telling them the awful things to say to other transgender kids at school, right? It's the 90%. We've got to work with them. We've got to educate them. We've got to bring them in. We've got to be a part of their communities, because we already are. And they need to acknowledge that more. So if there's anything I'm coming in hot with as the new ED that is like all me, and this is where my head is at with this org, and I've gotten some pretty good support from the community that they're on board with this direction as well, is that we will always be here to support and provide services for the 10%. And we will always just be doing that until we start working with the 90%. So we invite people to come in and join us. So I think that that's our big vision focus for the next 50 years, is that this is the Pride Center of the Capital Region, including all of the straight people who, whether they know it or not, either work with or are related to or go to church with or eat dinner at a restaurant as a lot of LGBTQ folks.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
British artist Scanner with his song Chimera from the 2021 album Alchemia.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I cannot help but feel misled, disheartened, and disappointed when I witness the Department of Interior taking steps to lease more public lands to oil and gas, all in the name of profit.
Environmentalists, including White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council member Jade Begay, are blasting a move to resume leasing federal lands. President Joe Biden called for an end to drilling on public lands on the campaign trail, but now faces mounting pressure to increase U.S. energy production to lower gas prices. But New Mexico State Senator Carrie Hamblin says diversifying away from fossil fuels can better protect communities.
Oil and gas pollution is a social and environmental justice issue, and communities across the country are being treated as disposable so that money can be made by the few off of the backs of the many.
The Bureau of Land Management will post sale notices today for 144,000 acres. Russian troops look to finally take Mariupol and may take custody of any man who remain there. The now-leveled southern Ukrainian city has held out since the start of the invasion, blocking Russian plans to connect two areas they control. The mayor's office says the invaders are filtering out all the Ukrainian men for forced service, labor, or isolation. Russia is warning that U.S. weapons shipments could lead to, quote, unpredictable consequences, unquote, while Ukraine's president is warning that Russia could use nuclear or chemical weapons. Former Defense Secretary Robert Gates says the odds of that are low.
It's hard to see what the military target of a chemical weapon would be that would have strategic significance that would outweigh the potential international consequences.
Moscow announced sanctions against British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. The UK has shipped significant weapons to Ukraine. China slammed a visit to Taiwan by a congressional delegation, including South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
To abandon Taiwan would be to abandon democracy and freedom. It would be to abandon free trade. It would reward the worst in humanity.
Beijing staged military drills in response to the visit and reaffirmed its claim on the self-governed island. President Biden will nominate former Deputy Secretary of the Treasury Michael Barr as the Federal Reserve's head of financial supervision. Barr helped lead a regulatory overhaul of the sector during the Obama administration after the bank-led financial crisis of 2008. Elon Musk is reportedly talking with investors about a new bid to buy Twitter. Twitter responded to Musk's first $43 billion takeover offer by diluting his shares. Today is the tax filing deadline. According to the Tax Foundation, the top half of federal income taxpayers will pay about 15%, while the bottom half about 3.5%. President Biden and the First Lady paid more than $150,000 for 2021, about 25% of their income. And after a two-year hiatus due to COVID, the White House Easter egg roll is back. 30,000 kids and their guardians will participate in today's event, which dates back to 1876. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather from your solar-powered radio station. On Monday, the National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 5 p.m. So it'll be sunny before that for the solar panels, and there'll be a high of 50 with a light and variable wind becoming southeast 6 to 11 miles per hour. Monday night, rain is likely. There's a 100% chance, and it might be snow, too, depending on where you are. 3 to 5 inches of snow are possible in higher grounds. That snow continues Tuesday morning before 9 a.m. Then it'll be just rain everywhere, with mostly cloudy skies and a high of 42 and a west wind from 9 to 11 miles per hour. Tuesday night, there is a 20% the rain continues before 11 p.m. with cloudy skies and a low around 36. Wednesday should be sunny with a high of 49 and a low around 31. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. From Richmond, Virginia, here's Jessica Ackerley. The song is called Inner Automation from her Morning Morning album from 2021. Thank you.
Thank you.